You're listening to the We Lead Well podcast, where well-being matters. This episode is brought to you in partnership with Progressive Masculinity and headteacherchat.com. Enjoy the episode. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the We Lead Well podcast. I am so happy to say that the podcast has now been in existence for 2 whole years and we are heading for 20,000 downloads. So I am so happy that that's the case, because when I first started thinking about the podcast, I would have been happy to have just 10 listeners, 10 downloads. So to have 20,000 and to still be here after 2 years is absolutely amazing. And I'm so grateful to anybody who's ever listened to the podcast or downloaded an episode, or if you're listening now, thank you very, very much for your support and for listening to the podcast. So I'm Vicky Maguire. I'm an education and leadership coach. So basically what I do is I do one-to-one coaching with school leaders. I do a lot of that through all sorts of different means. And I support schools to create coaching communities to support teaching and learning in their schools. And I've created the We Lead Well group coaching program for female school leaders. If you're feeling like you're a little bit lost, or you're not sure what's next for you, you feel like you're juggling too many plates. You don't juggle plates, do you? If you feel like you're juggling too many balls or you're spinning too many plates and you feel like something has to give, that would be the course for you. If you're interested in finding out more about the Women Leaders Group Coaching Program, which is truly transformational, it's made a difference in lots of female school leaders' lives, please do email me. It's Vicky@WeLeadWell. I would love to have a chat with you about what the course might be able to offer. So on today's show, I have an interview. Well, I've welcome back to the show, I should say, Ben Solly, who is the principal at Uppingham Community College in Rutland. Ben is, again, I say this so many times, but he is a head who I would love to have worked for, because I really believe that he leads authentically and he believes in leading from his values. I also feel like Ben has a lot of time for his staff. He really cares about the well-being of his staff, and actually I think he really trusts his staff, and I think those are key elements of effective school leadership. One of the things that Ben says in the interview is that he's happy for people to leave at the end of the school day. He's happy for people to go get in their cars and drive away at 3:15, and he trusts that they'll do their job. And this shows in the school's results, because they do get really good results. Their results in 2022 have been absolutely amazing, considering how much time has been lost to the pandemic. So well done to Ben on a great set of results this year. I am sure you're going to enjoy this interview. So here he is, Ben Solly. Enjoy. Ben Solly, it's a pleasure to welcome you back to the We Lead Well podcast. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well. Thank you so much for having me on again.
You are very welcome. Yeah, I'm interested in you saying that you're well, because I did just ask you prior to us starting recording, thinking that you were going to be totally exhausted. But you said you weren't. And the thing that interests me is that you said you've looked after yourself well this year. So I'm really interested in that, because I think lots of people who listen would love to hear what it is you've done to help keep your energy levels, I suppose, pretty level, so that you're going into the summer holidays with some energy left.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just a really important thing for teachers and head teachers. You know, you've got to take it really seriously, because it's a relentless job, and if you allow it to, it can consume you. And, you know, I think that's why we see such a eye-watering attrition rate for teachers, particularly younger teachers, and, you know, head teachers not having a huge amount of longevity in their careers, because they just suffer from burnout. And, you know, I remember when I walked into my first Leicestershire Secondary Heads conference, and, you know, I was relatively young at the time, 32, and I looked around the room and thought to myself, well, I'm the youngest here by quite a long way. And if I'm going to do this job for the rest of my teaching career, I've really got to, you know, find a balance in my lifestyle that enables me to have that longevity. And I think over the last couple of years, I've certainly improved in that. So there's some really practical things that I do. But then I think I've also improved my knowledge and understanding of, you know, simple things like happiness and balance in your life and perspective. And alongside those practical things, those have really, really helped me maintain higher levels of energy, particularly when it gets to the business end of the academic year. You know, we've got a couple of days left and then we break for the summer. And, you know, it's been really hard work this year, probably the hardest I've experienced in teaching, full stop. But actually, I'm feeling pretty good about it and feel in a good place physically and mentally as a result of those things that I've been doing.
I am totally on board with what you're saying about longevity and sustaining your career, because obviously my experience was of living at a point of like virtual exhaustion. And then when one thing came along, it tipped me over. And then, like you're saying, I was at that point of burnout. I couldn't do anything and I had to step back, and I'd always wanted to be a head teacher, but as a deputy head, I had to just step back and say, I can't do this for now. And that's 2 years ago, and I don't think I'm in a position for going back just yet, although I've got little thoughts in my head going around about what I might do. But I think what you're referring to there is really, really important. And I think to stress that to school leaders or people with aspirations for school leadership, that you really do have to look after yourself and pace yourself, don't you? So that you don't do too much too quickly, too young, and then get to a point of burnout and you can't sustain your career anymore. So one of the things that you said there was, if you allow it, like if you allow it, the job can take over your life. And I think that is something that so many leaders in school, teachers in school actually, really struggle with. Because the job is a vocation, it's very easy for it to take over your life. And then it's very easy to say, well, there's nothing I can do about it. It just, that's what it is. The role is just, I have to work 60, 65 hours a week, because if I didn't, what would happen? But people fear if I don't do all that work. So I suppose it's about boundaries, isn't it? What boundaries have you put in place that have helped you to not allow that I have to work X number of hours, you know, that you've not allowed it to consume you?
Well, there's practical things that we do as a school. And, you know, as the head teacher, I model those and then expect everybody else to take those things on board as well. We've done a lot of work on email this year, and it seems like a really, really small thing, but that could be something that's quite overwhelming for some teachers. And I always try and put myself in the shoes of a teacher that is delivering 5 lessons a day. You know, if they are constantly being bombarded by emails from senior leadership team or their colleagues or parents, you know, how on earth can they actually deal with those messages when they've got a really busy teaching day? And then, you know, you get to the end of period 5 and maybe you've got some marking to do, maybe you've got some preparation to do for your lessons tomorrow. You know, maybe it's Friday and you're looking forward to the weekend and you open your email account and wow, I've got an outrageous amount of things that I'm expected to respond to. And I think it's, you know, email can become the bane of a teacher's life. And so we've tried to implement expectations in school, and I've tried to summarize this 3 E's: etiquette, expectations, and embargo. And you know, I also think, you know, given the pandemic that we've had over the last couple of years, schools have become really, really easy targets for people who are deeply unhappy And sometimes we're just on the receiving end of people who just want to vent and they've got nobody else to vent at. And teachers just are there, you know, it's easy to get their email addresses and, you know, it seems like it's open season on teachers last couple of years. And I, you know, I've certainly noticed that, and colleagues that I speak to throughout the sector have also noticed a real spike in complaints and just nasty emails. So I think school leaders have got a real responsibility in protecting people from that, and also protecting people from the dangers that email can cause. And so we're in the process of developing a communication strategy. Now, I've never come across one of these in a school before. I've certainly never written one myself.
Yeah.
I know that big businesses, organizations will have these, but I think schools are notoriously poor at strategizing things like that, you know, because we're just so busy doing everything else. So we're working on that. We've got some training in September from a really interesting group of people. These are the Violence Reduction Network across Leicester and Leicester City, Leicestershire and Leicester City, I should say. And they're coming to do some training with us on dealing with difficult adults. Now, that might be difficult adults in the workplace, but also difficult adults in terms of communications with parents or members of the community. How can the school be proactive rather than reactive in its communications to avoid things getting to a tipping point and then you having to deal with complaints? So that's things that are on the horizon for us. But the practical things that we've done, in my first E, expectations, a couple of years ago, we introduced this little note on the bottom of our school email signature that, you know, you might have received this email at a time outside of your working hours. There is no expectation for you to immediately reply. Just to, that was really for colleagues within the organisation to understand that, you know, people aren't just sat on their computers all the time waiting for an email to drop in and then we'll deal with it instantly. And we've got a number of part-time colleagues here who, you know, I don't want them working when they've got their days off. So there should be no expectation for them to access their emails, let alone respond to them when they're not working. So we have that message there about their normal working pattern. You know, we're not on call 24/7. That's not our job to do that. The embargo is something that I've introduced this year. And what I wanted people to be able to do was, when they're not in school, not feel like they have to be constantly on high alert. It's going back to that 24/7 thing. Yeah. They don't, you know, discourage people actively from having their emails coming through as notifications to their mobile phones. And, you know, I'm still working on a couple of people who will remain unnamed that have them coming through to their watches. And so they can constantly see when they're being emailed through their smartwatch. And I just think it's really unhealthy because you're never switching off. So we say it's reasonable to send emails between 7:30 and in the morning and 5:30 in the evening. That's a normal working pattern for most people who work in schools. You know, we've got people that get here super early. We have people that go pretty much at the end of the school day, and we've got that flexibility. You know, everyone's got different priorities in their life. Some people might prefer to do some work later on when they've got their kids to bed because they prioritise getting home, picking their kids up from school, having dinner with them, doing some things, getting them to bed, then maybe doing a bit of work. But there's certainly no expectation that they should be doing that work at home. But you know what? Some people choose to, and we've got to respect that. But I felt that that's a reasonable range in terms of the time of the day to receive an email. If I receive an email between 7:30 and 5:30 on a weekday, I'm not going to take offence to that. But what I was clear on was I don't expect communications to be going on via email in the evenings. So beyond 5:30, just don't email people. It can wait till tomorrow. If you're choosing to work in the evenings and you need to send an email as part of that work, just either save it in your drafts and send it in the morning, or use the send later function that you can have on Outlook. That's the end of break time. And set it to go at 7:30 or 8 o'clock the next morning when people will be in work. And then I said the same thing about weekends. Don't send emails at weekends unless it's absolutely necessary. Unless it's something that's, you know, it's a Sunday night and there's a really crucial message that everybody needs to know about for Monday morning. It's going to be chaos if you don't send that communication. When we have school holidays, put an out of office email message on, so that there's anybody that emails you will not be expecting you to have a response, because you're on holiday and you have, that's your downtime, that's your opportunity to recharge and relax. So it was just making that clear, and I felt that I needed to make that clear to people, because there was still this unwritten expectation that, oh, I've got to be working, or I've got to be able to, you know, be available to answer email at all times. And I think I had to model that. And I've certainly noticed, you know, it's very, very rare for me to receive a message from any of my colleagues in those hours in the evening, at weekends and on holidays. And I think that's had a really positive impact on staff well-being. And then the other thing is just general etiquette. We've tried to stop people using all staff emails.
Yeah,
I think because there's been a whole, you know, there's been a real reduction in face-to-face meetings over the last couple of years. We've had to communicate more electronically. That's just meant that email traffic has increased during the school day, and it's something that I've actively tried to reduce. So I've said to people, there's got to be other ways that you can communicate than sending an all staff email. And we've introduced a number of things within the way that we work in the school to stop people doing that. And the other thing that there's a problem with email is often words can be, or intentions can become lost in translation. People can take offense to something that's really unintentional. It's just the nuance of language sometimes get misinterpreted.
I think the brain has a negative, it's got a negative slant, hasn't it? We're programmed to be more negative than positive. And I think sometimes people just read an email with that voice, don't they, with the tone of voice, you know?
Yeah.
And it's important that you read it, try to read it with a different tone of voice. Imagine it's Mary Berry, for example, sending you the email, or Tony Hart. Nobody knows who Tony Hart is anymore.
I remember Tony Hart more. And one of our school values is kindness, and so I need to be kind to people. And I guess one of the things that the external coach that we've used over the last 4 years has encouraged me and other leaders to do is, you know, even in something as simple as email, how can you model your school values? If your school values are something that, you know, are the highest currency in your school, how are you displaying those in the communications that you're sending, either externally or internally within the organization? And internally, that's more often than not via an email, isn't it? So how are you demonstrating for us is kindness, respect, and honesty? How are those golden threads visible within the words that you're writing? And so, you know, it doesn't always work, like you say, but I'm going to take that one from you, Vicky, that imagine it's being read to you by someone with a soothing, kind, relaxing voice.
It makes a big difference. It does make a big difference.
I'm just conscious you originally asked me about how I introduced that balance to my own life. And I went on this big rant about email, but that's just a practical thing that we've done in school to try and make the job for teachers, for leaders, more manageable, more sustainable. Now, there's loads and loads of other things that we've done, but that's I just felt that was something that's everybody receives email. Everybody probably moans about the amount of emails that they get. And so I just thought, well, what can I do in my position that will actively reduce the negative impacts of it, and certainly reduce the traffic to make our communications a little bit more efficient and effective? But that's just one element of trying to create those conditions where people can thrive and, you know, get to the end of term and not be completely exhausted. And, you know, there's a number of other things that I've done personally myself, but that's more to do with health and happiness, like I said to you, sustainability for myself as a leader in, you know, what is a challenging time in education and the world.
I'm interested in that, so I'll come back to it with the happiness and the balance. One of the things that you talk about very powerfully is acting as a role model, and I think as leaders in schools we do need to role model what we want for our staff. And in terms of well-being, it's really important that we model, like the things that you said with the email, but other elements as well, like some days leaving school at 4 o'clock, or you know, making it very clear that you have activities and hobbies that you do
outside school hours, maybe even on a school night. You know, sometimes you do things for yourself and something that you enjoy on a school night, maybe. And that's really important. I think a lot of school leaders really worry about how they are perceived and feel like, as the head teacher, I have to be perceived as someone who is working really, really hard and giving myself to this role and almost sacrificing my own life for this job. And I think they worry that staff will look at them if they're leaving school at 4 o'clock and tut tut, oh, look at him, I've got this big pile of marking to do and I won't be leaving until 6 o'clock, but the head teacher there, she's leaving it, they're leaving it, he's leaving at 4 o'clock, oh, very nice. And I think leaders worry about things like that, don't they? And sometimes that drives them to do more than they should be doing.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think I've seen that firsthand, but I've seen the damage that it does. You know, if those are the cultural norms you're setting for the organisation, that you have to be working late, you have to look like you're constantly busy, then if the head teacher's doing that, then the senior leadership team will consciously or subconsciously think, well, I need to do that to be successful in my job. And then that will permeate throughout the rest of the staff. And they'll expect, well, I can only be successful in this school if I'm getting in early, going home late, looking like I'm constantly busy. It just drives the wrong incentives and the wrong behaviours. And so it takes a bit of bravery and courage and confidence to be able to do that, to be open with people and say, you know, there will be times where I'm maybe the last person to arrive in the morning or one of the first people to leave in the evening, but that's okay. You know, one of the cultural norms that we've tried to establish here is that everybody works in different ways. Everybody's got different priorities in their life. And actually, whilst you're here, we expect you to work hard and we expect you to be good at your job, but it shouldn't consume your life. And everybody's got to find that balance. And that's going to be really individual to every single person. So, you know, from a role model perspective, yeah, you've got to role model those behaviors, and you've got to be explicit in communicating the how and the why of that. And it's one of the things I did quite early on here. And I guess it's just not something that I think about anymore, because I had that open, honest dialogue with the staff at the start of my headship here. And I think it's, you know, I think it's led to them respecting the fact that, yeah, I will. I'll sometimes, you know, I'm going to head over to Wolverhampton on a Wednesday night with my son to watch the Wolves. And I'll probably come in looking pretty tired on a Thursday morning. But you know what? That's really, really important to me. That's one of the things that brings me joy and happiness, despite how they've played, that precious time to me. And so I'm going to do that. And sometimes that means that I'm going to be heading out straight after the school buses have gone. So yeah, it's an important thing for us to establish as a school. But I think, again, like I said at the start, schools are notoriously bad. Head teachers are notoriously bad at doing that. And I think you're in the wrong job if you're in it to, if you're worried about what people think of you. You're never gonna please everybody. Mm. There's gonna be so many things that just completely split opinion, and you've got to have thick skin. You've got to be bold enough and brave enough to say, you know, this is what I stand for, this is what's important to me, and this is what's important for us as an organisation, and I'm going to lead by example. And some people will like that and admire that. Some people might disagree with it, but that's okay. I'm not going to allow it to affect me or my mood or certainly the strategy or direction I'm taking the school, or, like I said to you, the cultural norms that we're trying to establish here, because I believe, for the right reasons, if the staff are happy and can build in that sustainable lifestyle where they've got balance, then they're going to do a great job.
It's interesting that you say the establishing the cultural norms, because as you've been talking, I've been thinking about that, the development or the building or creating of a culture in a school, and potentially how you have to be resilient as you are going through that process, and that you might have to be prepared for some staff to say those things like, oh, look at Ben leaving at 3 o'clock and I've got all, and you've got to get through that and you've got to just keep doing it, like you're saying, to make it the norm, so that eventually that staff member goes, oh, he's doing that, I think I'll go at 3 today. And it takes a while, doesn't it, to build that culture. And as a leader, you've got to be quite fastidious about just keeping going with things and not giving up, not falling back into old habits or whatever, but just keeping doing what you believe in and what you know is the right thing to do.
Yeah, it comes down to the things that you can control, doesn't it? You know, I can't control what other people think or what other people do. So I've got to decide what are the right things for me to do and for us, and what are the right things for us as a school to do. And then if I, at the end of the school day, if I have led and managed in a way that is in line with the school values and in line with my personal values, then that's all I can do, actually. What people think about that, the judgments that they make about it, are totally out of my control. So I'm not going to allow that to affect me and you know, whether I'm happy or not, or whether I feel stressed or not, because if I'm going to go down that route, I'm going to, you know, succumb to a lifetime of unhappiness, because you're never going to please everybody.
And have you found that it's taken you a while to build this culture?
I think I inherited a really healthy culture here.
Right.
But there was certainly never permission granted to do some of those things. I think people needed to be granted that permission to manage their own time, to be trusted. You know, trust is a central theme that runs through our school culture. All the professionals here are trusted to do their job really, really well. And my job is to give them the conditions in which they can do their job really well. And so if they are constantly being micromanaged or counting the minutes that they are spending within school, then that will just lead to a real culture of distrust, and people won't feel valued, and therefore they won't be motivated, they won't do a great job. So they've got to be trusted, they've got to be respected, and so, you know, over communicating those things, get, you know, I'm giving you permission at times to just leave when the children leave, because you might be doing your work at home. As long as you're turning up every day and you're doing a really great job and you're modeling our school values and you're meeting all the elements of your job description, it's up to you as a person to, and as a professional, to manage how, you know, what the outside of that looks like. There is some inherent risk with that, because some people might take the mickey, but actually they don't. You know, I've never really had to have any conversations with people saying, oh, you know, I'm not sure you're really putting the work in. I'm not sure you're working hard at the moment. You know, I've had plenty of conversations with people where there's been an issue with performance. That's fine. That's normal. But in terms of effort or commitment, there's never been that, because I think people really do, you know, when they feel valued, when they feel trusted, they'll be determined to do a good job. Most people come into this profession for the right reasons, don't they? And I think sometimes heads forget that.
Yes. I don't know if you heard, Ruby was definitely in agreement with what you were saying there. She gave a little she gave a little woof at one point, just at the perfect point. I've got a huge amount of respect for you in terms of the things that you are saying about the level of trust that you have for your staff. And I think that when you do trust staff in that way and you build the mutual respect between yourselves as professionals, that is how you make people loyal and engaged and motivated for the most part. I think that that's what motivates people, because they want to give back to you what you've given to them, that sense of that they are respected, that there's trust, that there's autonomy. And I love what you say about, you know, if staff leave at 3 o'clock after the buses have gone, that's absolutely fine with you. Or if they turn up sort of on the last minute in the morning, if they're in their classroom when the children are there, or they're there to greet the children, that's okay with you. I had a conversation with, I do the leadership performance coach role for MPQSL, and I had a conversation with one of my participants in my group who said that she's just moved on to SLT. And in those meetings, the senior members of staff are very derogatory about members of staff and say, oh, did you see X member of staff leaving the building at 3:30? How ridiculous. And they were actually, you know, talking about members of staff behind their back and being derogatory about that. And I think it's really important that, like you say, you understand staff have different responsibilities, don't they? A 22-year-old member of staff might be able to stay till 6 o'clock and get all their work done, but a 36-year-old dad of three children might need to leave at 4 to go and collect the children from after school club. What do you think it is within you that allows you to do that when a lot of, and I think probably more than I would like to accept or admit, senior leaders look disdainfully on staff because of that?
I think it's certainly something that I've developed my understanding, I think, of how there are different pressures in people's lives at various points. And you described it really articulately there, the difference between somebody who's just maybe fresh out of teacher training and doesn't have many responsibilities outside of, you know, their professional life, compared to somebody who might have a really, really busy family, or, you know, caring for elderly parents or grandparents, you know, all sorts of things going on. And I think, you know, if you want to get the best out of people, then you've genuinely got to care about them as human beings, and not just how can I get the best out of this person as an employee, because that, you know, that's rather shallow, isn't it? And people will eventually see through that. So I guess the approach that I've taken is to be understanding, to be caring about them as individuals and getting to know them as individuals, and compassionate about the challenges that they face. And then I think when you get that balance right with people, the discretionary effort that you get back is huge. And so it benefits the school. But that's just a byproduct, isn't it? That's just a benefit, is that they come to work and they attend really well and they enjoy their job. And so you get great performance out of them. But it's about valuing them as a person. And I think as I've got older, when I started out as a head, I definitely didn't have that level of understanding. And, you know, that probably influenced some of the decisions and the way that I worked. But I think as I've got older and I've become more mature and more appreciative of the challenges that people have faced, so, you know, certainly the pandemic has shone a light on that massively. And I guess it's just further enhanced my understanding of the importance of being caring and compassionate to the people that I work with. Then it's got to be a central theme that runs through the school. So it's not just I trust you to do a great job and I respect you professionally, it's actually I care about you as a person and I want you to be able to fulfill all the elements of your life that are important to you, as well as doing a really great job here, because those two things will go hand in hand, won't they? If people haven't got a fulfilling, happy life outside of the school environment, that's going to affect their ability to teach really well or to perform their role in school to the best of their ability. So, you know, I look at it from a holistic perspective in just genuinely caring about them, but also the byproduct of that is they will come to school and do a good job.
Before we hear more from Ben about how you can look after yourself and your staff better, I'd like to tell you a little bit about our partner, Head Teacher Chat.
Head Teacher Chat discusses lots of topics, from how to support pupils with learning, how to support parents, and the many issues that come with leading a school. The aim of Head Teacher Chat is to support head teachers and school leaders who are in a challenging and often lonely role. They do this by offering lots of information for schools to tap into. For example, they have lots of fantastic education companies on their database for leaders to discover, as well as leadership templates to download. They've written product reviews for leaders who are looking for products for their school. And this year, they've even launched the very first school leader planner, especially designed to help leaders to be productive and organised. If you'd like to hear more about Headteacher Chat, you can find them on their website at www.headteacherchat.com. Headteacher Chat, it's what headteachers are talking about. Now let's get back to the interview.
Discretionary effort, that's what I was referring to before, when you get that sense of mutual respect, isn't it? I think you said three words then: understanding, caring and compassionate, that really resonated with me in terms of how you approach looking after your staff. The understanding bit is something that I think is really important, and that as a leader, you have to spend some time, don't you, to understand your staff. And like you're saying, you have to know, or you have to figure out how you can find out which members of staff are caring for elderly relatives, which members of staff have maybe got someone who's sick in their family, disabled children or children with specific learning difficulties, all of those things that have an impact on a person's ability to do their job to the best of their ability. So as a head teacher, how do you develop that level of understanding of your staff and what their situation is and how that might impact on their ability to do their job?
Well, I thought it was really interesting what you said there about the person that you're working with on the MPQ course.
Oh, I was just so...
Senior leadership team are, you know, having, you know, unethical discussions about their colleagues and maybe the cultural norms are really, really different in that organisation. Oh. But isn't a more powerful conversation for a senior leadership team to have, we need to look out for this person at the moment. They've got a really tough time at home. You know, so what do we need to look out for with them? Do they need an arm around their shoulder? Do they not want to talk? Are they the type of person that doesn't want to talk about it, that work is a bit of escapism for them? Or do they need some actual professional help? Otherwise, they're going to go under. That's a much more powerful and appropriate conversation for a senior leadership team to be happening about one of their colleagues, not so-and-so's leaving at 20 past three. That's unacceptable. Without the care, compassion or understanding that that person might be leaving to go and care for an elderly relative, or, you know, that one of their family members is in hospital and is seriously ill, and they're going to, that's the only opportunity they've got to go and visit them. Or, you know, they're a single parent and they've got no childcare, so they've got to go and get the kids because after school club's not available. They can't afford after school club. So all these things going on, you know, I think it's incumbent on senior leadership teams to have that 360 view of people. And you don't want to know absolutely everything about them, but you've got to know enough to be able to care for them individually whilst they are, you know, working within your team. And so, you know, that's got to start at the top, hasn't it? You know, the head teacher's got to model that. If you want your senior leadership team to be understanding, caring, compassionate, if those are things that hold a high level of currency within your school culture, then the head's got to model it, the SLT have got to model it. Otherwise, you know, how do you expect your teachers or your pastoral staff to show understanding, care or compassion towards students, because the adults in the organisation are not showing those characteristics towards each other? Otherwise, it's disingenuous, isn't it? It's inauthentic. You know, we're just doing it as a show because it sounds good. That's what we should be doing for young people. Well, why aren't we doing it for ourselves? If these things actually matter to us, it should be everyone, should be all stakeholders.
You mentioned before, actually, I want to just address this. If you are going to get staff to come to you and be honest as well and share those things, because ideally you want a member of staff to come to you, don't you, to say, this is what's happening, my mom has got this and I'm going to have to go to the hospital and I'm going to need to do this, so that you can then have that conversation with the member of staff about what they need and what you can put in place for them, rather than you having to go out and find these things out. And just thinking about how that environment or that culture is created within which people feel like they can go and explain what's happening at home. Like in the school that I've described with the MPQSL participant, I would think staff are probably scared to death about going to see one of the senior leadership team to say, this is happening and I'm going to have to leave at this time, or I might not be able to get in until this time. How have you gone about creating that environment and that culture that people will come to you and share things as well? It's not just all you having to go out there and do the work.
One of the most influential books that I read as I was developing as a young head teacher was Love Over Fear by John Tomsett. And it's about, you know, creating that culture in a school where, you know, love is the golden thread that runs through the organization and staff are not living in fear, you know, living in that the danger of always being caught out, or, you know, an oppressive accountability system within a school, within an organization. And then so that spoke deeply to me, and it really resonated with me. I want people to love teaching, love coming to school, love their job. So that was one of the first things I presented to staff on in the first inset day that I had back in August 2017. It was a slide that I put up there. This is going to be the culture that we establish here. We may already have it, but it's something that's really, really important to me. And under my leadership, this is the way that I certainly want things to develop and how I want us to work together. And then it's one thing saying it, you know, actions speak louder than words. So what do people actually see? How do you develop that trust so somebody can openly come to me or the HR manager or another member of the senior leadership team or their line manager and say, I've got this really, really difficult situation going on with my life at the moment, and I just need a little bit of flexibility or understanding. And from my perspective, what does that look like in practical terms? Well, it looks like people, you know, the policies that we have in school will say that members of staff have got 5 days off paid discretionary leave, or, you know, if they suffer a bereavement or something like that, 5 days where they would be paid. And you know what? I've never stuck to that. If somebody needs more time because they've got had a variety of things go terribly wrong in their life, and for whatever reason they need time off school, I just give them the time off school because I know it's important to them as an individual. I'm understanding of the situation that they've got. And the byproduct is further down the line, the school will benefit because there'll be huge amounts of discretionary effort that come back. And that, you know, like you said, that takes time. That can't just happen instantly because people will just trust you. You've got to earn that trust. And so over time, people will see that individuals have been given flexibility, they've been given understanding, and they've not been met with, well, our policy says this, so this is all you're entitled to. And I guess that's the approach that I've taken.
And I suppose there has to be a level of integrity as well, doesn't there? Because you have to show staff that if you ask them, what do you need? If someone comes to you to say, these are my circumstances and I need some support, then it's not enough just to know, is it? You have to have the conversation where you say, what do you need? What do you want from us? What can we provide for you? But then you have to follow through with that. And you have to understand that some people are not going to get over that in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, that it might be if someone separates from their partner, for example, and they're going through a divorce, they might be suffering for a year with that. And you have to extend your understanding, your caring and your compassion for a period of time as well, to allow someone to come out the other side of whatever it is they're going through.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I guess people who maybe take an opposing approach to one that I've done and really stick rigidly to policies or aren't as flexible with their understanding, the challenge might be passed my way as well. You know, Ben, are you a little bit of a walkover? Can people just come and say, well, I've got this and that going on, and, you know, they're going to take the mick? And actually children are going to suffer because you've not got them consistently in school. And you know what, there is a balance to strike there.
Yeah.
But I think when people, I've certainly found when people know that you are fair and understanding, then they won't do that, because you recruit the right people, you treat them properly, you give them respect, and you make them feel trusted and valued, because they genuinely are trusted and valued. It's not just lip service. Then they won't take the mickey. They will be professional. And whatever difficulties they've got going on in their lives, if they know that you're going to take an understanding approach with them, then they will, you know, they will overcome those aspects, and they'll come back to work and more often than not be really, really grateful that you have taken that kind approach with them. And then you get that discretionary effort back in bucket loads.
I think that it's actually, when people say, oh, people will take the mick, I actually think it's probably the opposite. Because when you give and you are kind and understanding and you show that compassion, people then will tend to think, not I need to be back to my full 100% as quickly as possible, but they probably get to that point more quickly because they've had the support. Whereas if you don't put the support in, or it's support, I felt a little bit when I separated from my husband and was going through a divorce, I was referring to myself there. It was like, I felt like it was, there was some understanding shown for a month or so. And then it was like, come on, you should be back to your full normal self now. Mm. And I felt that I was going through a totally life-changing, very, very stressful and upsetting period of my life. I mean, I'm five years down the road now and still in therapy. So I think you have to understand that people don't recover as quickly as you might want them to, but if you support them and you put measures in place to support them, they'll probably get there more quickly than if you don't support them. And they're probably more likely to go off long-term sick. You know, they might keep coming in school if you provide a counsellor for them, or if you provide flexible working conditions in some way, whatever you can do, they'll stay in school and they'll give you more, and like you're saying, long-term, even more. But if you don't get it right with them, there's a tendency for them to have 3-4 months off and not be in for that whole time and be looking for another job.
Yeah, you know, you kind of weigh that up, don't you? What's the alternative here? If you were to do that, if I take an approach that's not understanding or not kind, what is likely going to be the outcome here? And like you say, it's more often than not, then that person's going to go under, and that's terrible for them. And it's not good for the school either, is it? Because then you're stuck with a staffing issue. You've got a class that needs teaching. You're on a whole range of classes that haven't got their teacher for an extended period of time. So I think you've got to balance all those things out. And, you know, from our perspective as a school, where one of our three values is kindness, then we've got to model that. And I heard a great quote a couple of years ago: kindness is contagious. And there was this comparison, is, you know, 5 times more contagious than COVID, the R number at the time. You know, and you just think, well, actually, if I am kind to people consistently, and it's genuine and authentic, they will go, and that will rub off on other people, and they will be kind to others. And you think, well, what ripple effect can that have in an organization if we're constantly talking about kindness and it has a high currency within the school, and it's modeled by the head consistently and by all other adults? Then over time, that will become the cultural norm. People will be kind to each other. And ultimately, that's what we want for the children, is it? We want to develop young people that go into the world and they are kind human beings. So that's got to permeate all aspects of the school community, starting with the head and how they treat the staff.
And I think that one of the things that is happening to me at the moment is I have perimenopausal brain fog, and I just go blank on things. And that what I was going to say then just went totally and utterly blank. But I would like to come back to, right near the start, you talked about you and how you've looked after yourself. And I think this does fit in, because you've talked about being a role model of well-being. And,
you talked about improving your own knowledge of happiness and balance. And when you said that, I just wondered how you've done it. How did you improve your knowledge of happiness and balance? And then how did you apply the things that you'd learned?
I think a significant influence on me has been the coaching that I've received really since I started working as a head. And I have used the same leadership coach throughout that time. That person's had an amazing effect on me, gaining that balance in my life and that perspective. And I would say the most influential element of that has been me being able to create alignment for myself within my life. So, you know, the inside person is absolutely aligned with the outside person that's portrayed to the world. And I think sometimes, you know, you often hear people saying teaching or leadership is an act, you know, you've got to put on that act. And I just think that's the most unhealthy way of going about it. That's an unsustainable approach to take to life, really. And I think I must have mentioned it in one of my first coaching sessions with John, you know, talking about compartmentalizing the elements of a school day or the elements of headship that were really tough, to protect the elements of my life that were the most important to me. So, you know, such as family, and you know, you have to deal with some really challenging situations. So you compartmentalize those parts of your life. So actually I can go home and I can switch off. And he said, you know what, Ben, that's just, it's okay if you do that. Lots of people do that, but actually it's not sustainable. It's really quite dangerous. You've got to be your authentic self, you know, deeply understand yourself as who you are, what you stand for, what your values are. And then through all aspects of your life, whether that's professional or whether that's your, you know, personal life outside of school, live by those values 100% of the time. And if you can do that, you've got a chance of having a long career in this job, a long successful career. And I guess it's taken me a while and those things have evolved over time, but I feel like I've certainly been in a place within the last year or two where I've really achieved that alignment, where actually it means that my happiness is not dependent on any external factors. And so my happiness with myself, with my life, can't be influenced by things that happen to me. There might be events which are upsetting. There might be really joyful experiences, but those are separate from my happiness, because my happiness is dependent on my alignment. And my alignment is, you know, living in line with my values, being my authentic self, and the inside person being absolutely aligned with the outside person, that is my decisions, my behaviors, my actions, what the outside world sees. And I guess that's given me that overall well-being that means that I feel, you know, fresh and ready to go now, and it's the last week of term. That hasn't always been the case. You know, I've got to this point in the academic year previously, and I've been ready for that 6-week break. I've been absolutely knackered. And you know what? I'm going into it with energy and positivity and really, really looking forward to being able to spend that time doing the things that I really, really want to do and really enjoy doing. But I think I've only been able to achieve that because of that overarching alignment that I have established. And I'd say that's the last 18 months.
I've remembered what I was going to say before, and it sort of links to what you're saying there, because you've had a coach, and coaching can be quite expensive in some ways. But what I was thinking when we were talking about staff and we were talking about support that you would put in place for staff, it's not only support when things are going wrong, is it? It's how you support staff when things are going well for them as well. And it comes down to professional development opportunities and being coached and engaging in, you know, lots of different things. Because I think schools spend about 80% of their budget, the whole school budget, on staff. And I think that in some schools, they don't necessarily understand that if you spend 80% of your budget on staff, or between 70 and 80% of your budget on staff, then you need to invest in those staff and you need to help them to be the best that they can be. And you need to provide the right conditions in which they can thrive and flourish. And coaching is one of those things, or professional development opportunities. Where do you stand on that in terms of the amount of money that you invest in staff and staff development and supporting them through the good times as well as the difficult times?
I mean, coaching's had a huge influence on me, as I've just described. And one of the things I wanted to do when I came here was introduce this theme of coaching through the traditional line management structure. So, you know, the person who would commonly be your line manager should have a relationship with you that's a coaching one, you know, in order to build leadership capacity within the school, build sustainability within the school, develop people. Then what they don't want to turn up to those one-to-one meetings and just have a checklist of things to run through. Have you done this? Have you done that? Tell me about this. Tell me about that. It should be more of a coaching relationship. But after a year, I realized that no matter how good of a coach you are, someone can never really 100% open up to you in the way that coaching can be truly powerful if they are the person that can technically hold you accountable for meeting your job description or your performance management. We call it something different here. And so the power of an external coach for us was transformational, actually. And we've not been able to have it throughout every single year because, like you said, it is expensive. And it started off with just senior leaders, and then we extended it to our extended leadership team. So people with middle leadership responsibilities, they really benefited from it. And then in subsequent years, we then just opened it up to everybody. Come and have a weekly coaching session for half an hour with this person. And we had to use a variety of funding streams to be able to do that. I mean, he's had a sabbatical this year, so we only used him at the start of the academic year. Since the start of this calendar year, he's been off doing other things. But, you know, I can't underestimate how influential that has been on us. And then, so it's not just all hinging on that one person. We have invested in a number of people across the school, lead practitioners who've gone and taken coaching qualifications so they can go and coach other people across the organisation, so it becomes a bit more affordable and sustainable to us. Now, that doesn't necessarily have the impact of this external person who's committed their professional life to becoming an expert coach, but it's certainly, you know, making a positive difference. So that for us is really great. And our whole CPD program is, you know, we stole the Richard Branson phrase, train people so they're able to leave, treat them so they want to stay. So we've got a huge amount of investment that's gone in through a variety of routes to make sure people are motivated professionally, challenged professionally, and have got the opportunity to move their careers forward. But if they're treated really well as colleagues within the organization, they're going to want to stay because the conditions here for thriving are great professionally. And so I've had to be creative because there's been people that, you know, are going to reach a bit of a ceiling within the organization because their head of department or their second department are going absolutely nowhere. But you've got this amazing person coming through, developing loads of skills, competencies and qualities. They're going to be a fantastic leader. And you risk losing them unless you find creative ways of keeping them. So we've developed different alternative career pathways for them through things like lead practitioner qualifications. And that means, you know, boosting their salary, putting them on a different scale, giving them different responsibilities within the school. But it means you keep great people and they're able to progress through alternative routes. And there's always going to be some people that end up having to leave because they need a fresh opportunity somewhere else. And that's fine. We take pride in the fact that they will have gained qualifications and skills and experiences through the training program here. And it's great that they're going on to further their careers. You know, I think that's, you know, that's a contribution to the education system, isn't it, that we should be proud of. And I know some people are often met with almost derision from their head teachers when they say, I'm going for this job, or I've got this job, I'm leaving. And and people get a really hard, you know, I've had several people come to me this year who I know who work in other schools say, my head gave me a really hard time when I told them that I was leaving, and made them feel guilty about, you know, we've invested in you and now you're going to do this. Whereas I'm genuinely happy for them. I'll say, I'm gutted that you're leaving, because you've got big shoes to fill. Well, we've got your big shoes to fill now, but I'm really happy for you because you've got this opportunity to further your career. And I guess that's come from the way that I was treated when I was coming through as a teacher. You know, the first school that I worked at gave me so many opportunities that were beneficial to me. And I think it's my responsibility to, you know, pay that back and give other people the chance to develop in the same way I was given those opportunities, because I know that's not always the case in all schools.
It absolutely isn't, is it? I think the important thing to recognise as well, when you're developing staff and you keep staff, and this is totally like purely pragmatic and practical, is the amount of money that you save in your recruitment budget. if you can keep the staff, and every single thing that you have talked about today, I think this is a really nice way to finish off, actually, because everything that you've talked about today will help you as a leader to keep your best staff for as long as possible. And obviously you can't keep them forever. Someone wants to go and be a deputy or a head teacher. Those opportunities are not going to come up necessarily in your school. And people, what you want is people to be really, really sad that they're leaving your school, don't you? That they really cry in their leaving speech and they're very emotional. But joking aside, I think that is the key thing, isn't it? It's all about, and I think if more schools applied some of the strategies and ideas and things that you've talked about today in their own organisations, I don't think we would be having the retention crisis that we're having, or the recruitment crisis. I mean, so many head teachers have talked to me about the lack of quality people out there, but some schools are appointing these people, and it's because they create an environment in which people want to work, and it's so important. And I just love the things that you said today. Like, all of the things that you said resonate so strongly with me. And I think, yes, if I were a head teacher, maybe I will be again one day. Maybe I might move to primary. That's something that's fizzing around in my head at the minute. But the things that you are saying are the things that I would like to embody as a head teacher. And I've got huge respect for you for that. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you today. I've really, really enjoyed it. And I think every single assistant, deputy and head in all the schools in the country should listen to this podcast interview with you to just hear the things that you're saying, because I think it's so important.
Well, you're very kind, Vicky. Thank you. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Kindness is one of my values as well, but so is honesty. So I'm not just being kind, like I am being honest with you. So thank you so much for joining us and for coming on a second time, and just taking the time out of your day. I'm very, very grateful to you, and I'm sure people will have really, really enjoyed listening to you.
Oh, absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, I did tell you before I started the interview how good it was, and I'm sure that having listened to it, you will agree with me that Ben says so many important things about leadership and looking after your staff, looking after yourself. As I said to him, totally resonates with me. I think the most powerful thing that he says is that if you want to get the best out of your people, you have to see and treat them as human beings. And that is just the key for leadership for me. You know, trusting your staff, understanding that they've got different pressures, different people's lives are different at different times, and recognizing that and treating people as individuals. The way that we try to ask our staff to treat the children as individuals, we don't do things exactly the same for all of the children in our care. And it's really important that we don't do the same things for all of the staff in our care. Also, that we see them as individuals with differing and individual needs. I think what he says about 80% of your staff budget, 80% of your budget being spent on staff means that you should be investing in your staff. And Ben talks about the power of coaching, and then you hear me repeatedly say that in every episode of the podcast, but I think it's really important to listen to the experience of a head teacher, principal working currently in education, who can vouch for the fact and, you know, reinforce how influential coaching has been in his school and how much of a difference it has made to the staff and to their ability to do their jobs well. And I don't think you can underestimate the power of coaching. So if you would like to, having listened to Ben talk about coaching, if you would like to have a chat with me about how coaching could have an impact on school improvement and on staff well-being or leadership well-being in your school, please do get in touch with me at vicky@weleadwell.co.uk. I would be more than happy to have a chat with you about it, because I really believe in it. I really believe in it also. Just a couple more things that I want to draw out of what Ben said. One of the keys is modelling well-being as a school leader and not being afraid to do that, not being afraid to go home early one or two days a week, or not being afraid to come in a little bit later. So you model those things to do with well-being. And I think, like Ben said, it takes a lot of courage and bravery and confidence to be open and honest in that approach. But when you model that to staff, you will be able to change the culture. But remember that culture takes a long time to change and evolve, and you have to be persistent and tenacious with it. Anyway, that is all we've got time for today. It was an absolute pleasure to interview Ben for our 2-year anniversary episode. So thank you so much for listening. It would be great if you've enjoyed the episode, if you enjoy the show, if you could go onto iTunes and do a review for us. 5-star review would be obviously what I would love you to give, but obviously just go on there and do a review for us. That would be really great. So that's all we've got time for this week. I will speak to you next time. Take care of yourself, take care of your staff, and lead well. This episode of the We Lead Well podcast was brought to you in partnership with Progressive Masculinity and headteacherchat.com.